The Money Show. Business Unusual with Colin Cullis.
So social media was going to be this great unifier. It was going to be the way that everybody could share information. It was going to bring us all closer together. And sometimes it does. And a lot of the time it is increasingly divisive and makes us want to fight and kill each other. But some of the time, Colin Cullis, it's utilized very effectively, particularly when it comes to the world of cohesive protest. And you've done some big studies into this.
Yeah, and we first picked up on this in 2016 when South Africa was in the midst of the Fees Must Fall, arguably, I think, South Africa's first major social movement that was enabled or amplified by social media. And again, most of these things, you know, people who research this sort of subject will take many years to determine exactly the extent of the role and the amount of influence it actually had. But I think it's undeniable that the tool that social media provides us certainly has a role to play, and the role can either be for good or, depending on what the goal is, can work negatively. It can divide us or it can unite us. And so I wanted to just touch on, again, some of the stories that have happened till now and the most recent ones, which Black Lives Matter, I think, has come to the fore. And the strange way sometimes that it interacts not just with the social elements, the social mobilization, the social protests, but parts of social media that has generally got nothing to do with it can combine with them. So a brief history again, arguably one of the first that used the fact that we had mobile phones to make us mobile was Kenya in 2007 with the Ushahidi, a platform that was created allowing people to SMS and report violence that broke out after the elections. Not necessarily to stop it, but at least to let people know something was happening and so that people could report it, get to the scene and respond to it. Arguably one that was even bigger, but again, researchers will still have to determine the extent that it had, was the Arab Spring. And I think the major influence there was allowing people who otherwise would have been kept separate from knowing that they had major issues with their governments to find that they did actually have support with each other, and then to organize to say where and when they would gather in order to protest and bring about the change they wanted. There is also an argument that some, I think, fairly can make that in the wake of the Arab Spring, the power of social media and the fact that the movements never really had a plan B for once they could deal with the regimes that are no longer going to happen, that it possibly even emboldened or allowed groups like ISIS to become as powerful as they did, again, using the amazing reach and the incredible power that social media has to connect people who are like-minded across the world. And then moving closer to where we are now, 2013, and the founding of Black Lives Matter. And I think it's worthwhile pointing out how Black Lives Matter, the term, came to be, because a lot of people still don't understand the term and so think the All Lives Matter is justified and isn't actually a cop-out or a completely, you know, it's a dismissive way of acknowledging what actually happened. And so one of the founders, there were three women who effectively founded the movement, but one of them had posted on Facebook in response to the acquittal of the person that had killed Trayvon Martin, a young child at the time, 17, and being acquitted for something that was clearly an unfair death of someone, moved her to write on Facebook that our lives matter, Black Lives Matter, to which one of the co-founders replied with the hashtag Black Lives Matter. And so began that movement. They were already activists. They already were campaigning against social issues relating to gun violence and specific racism, police brutality against Black people. But given that it was 2013, that's a good 7 years before we've reached the point where we are now. And brands and other communities in countries all around the world have kind of adopted that as a slogan for realizing that something has to change. And quite honestly, South Africa has a long way to go in recognizing its own challenges with how policing happens in the country, perhaps this movement might help us focus on it. But generally, the social movements have got a lot of news coverage because, of course, news organizations will follow that part of social media, where the vast majority of social media isn't engaged in social protest or these sorts of movements. They're invested in all sorts of banal, arbitrary, fun things. And one big section of it is, of course, music. And initial artists were very big in growing the first social media followings on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram were all musicians. So we had the likes of fans of Justin Bieber, who were the Beliebers. Rihanna had a Navy. Lady Gaga had a Little Monsters. And they gave a real improved way, I would say, for fans to interact with the artists themselves and for the artists to interact directly with them. But the genre that I think probably defines the period from 2000 till now has been K-pop, in the same way rock music or rap or R&B and hip-hop has had its sort of peak times. K-pop is certainly one of those that, if not ascendant, is certainly rising to become very, very popular. And while it's centered on pop music out of South Korea particularly, the fact that South Koreans are so mobile-enabled, so tech-enabled, means that those bands were highly attuned to how to connect with people online. And as a consequence of being online, they didn't just have to connect with people in South Korea. They could connect with people all around the world. And for the most part, it was a wonderful opportunity for people to follow their bands pretty much the same way Beatlemania would have affected people in the 60s or the Rolling Stones or any of the other large bands. The confluence, though, has happened a little more recently as the bands themselves have started taking a more active role in social issues. And one of the big ones, BTS, whose fan base are called the ARMY, which, if I can quickly look up what it stands for, it's the Adorable... I'm going to have to go look that up for you because it escapes my mind.
I'm willing to leave that one up to you. The Adorable... Yes, the Adorables.
Yeah, it's a lovely acronym. Adorable Representative MCs for Youth. There we go. And the other big one are Blackpink, and their fans are more easily remembered as the Blinks. But the point is that those bands do take a point on usually socially uplifting issues, body positivity, etc. And with something like Black Lives Matter, they did say, look, we need to treat people equally and fairly. And so the first thing was when they did make a donation of $1 million to support the movement, fans took it upon themselves to say, hey, let's match it. And supposedly, within 24 hours, had managed to raise $1 million. Now, that might be difficult if you consider there aren't that many. And generally, you might think an army consists of hundreds of thousands or possibly even millions. Well, I don't know how you can definitively say this, but one number I've seen has that the BTS army has 48 million people in it. That is an incredible number of people who, either on their own behalf or with some of the prodding from the band itself, can get involved in things. Usually it's sharing their latest songs or which their favorite dance moves are and replicating that and sharing that. The fan cams, etc., which is sort of video shot at your favorite concert. And another misperception some people may have is that, well, these are all people in South Korea and they're somehow just spreading this all around the world. Well, no. This is a global movement now. And so in particular, the efforts of the BTS fans in America are most likely American citizens. They just happen to love a band that's not from America. And so their most recent intervention was with the U.S. president, who had decided to restart up his rallies and host it, even though most medical experts would have said it was a bad idea, and allowed people to sign up and attend. He's kind of done this before. It's a wonderful opportunity, quite honestly, for politicians to get your name and your email address and your for their own marketing purposes. Because, of course, if you want to do ads on platforms like Facebook and you happen to have somebody's name, email address, and phone number, then Facebook allows you to more specifically target them. So, really, it's just a great way to sign up for people because you don't need a ticket to attend a rally.
This is the amazing thing, isn't it? I mean, it's this how kids have now utilized the social media tools as complete disruptors. And I mean, if you're an angry Republican, you're going to be angrier. But for the rest of us, I think it's quite clever, innovative, and funny.
I think maybe the takeout is that young people are likely to discover the opportunities and the extent to which these platforms can be used. Generally for good, I would like to think. But once they discover the ways in which it can be used for this, others will move in and try and capitalize it and use it for their own purposes. The question is, should they and should they have access to it? And I suppose if you want to go for an older example, maybe from our generation, is that we were the ones who knew how to program the VCR, not our parents. And so if we wanted to control what was recorded, it was in our power. And so children typically are just naturally curious and capable of adapting and using these tools, but they are incredibly powerful tools. And as much as the climate strikes Black Lives Matter, and in this case, the interventions of fans of a band could disrupt politicians that are possibly not on the right agenda. The fact that they have that ability means it can be used by others just as well. And the dark side for this whole thing, for example, would be the rise of flat earth society conspiracy theories comes as a consequence of YouTube allowing people to post that and share that stuff everywhere. Anti-vaxxing, all sorts of other social issues that we absolutely could do without are amplified and empowered by these really powerful platforms who, for the most part, are very reticent to be involved in the moderating because they either believe it's a free speech issue or, I think more practically, it's too hard. When you have over 2 billion users on a platform like Facebook, the size of the moderating team you need to keep the bad stuff off is just not almost worth your while. Yeah. Certainly not when, for the vast majority of the world's population who use it, they're not really generating a return, a significant return, for Facebook that would justify the spend that's required. Yet Facebook has been involved in practices and certainly conflicts in other countries, which had they been spending a little bit more, they would have sorted it out. Sure. Now, the positive thing here perhaps is to say that every time we've had a new mass medium or a new technological advance like this, there's been a period where everybody said, what is this? It's just a fad. Then it's been adopted, usually by the young. It then been exploited by those who realize what the young can do with it. It goes through a bit of chaos, and then slowly we start finding a happy medium between who should have access, how they may use it, and the regulations that are required to manage it. I hope we are reaching the level of, I won't say maturity. These social platforms are coming up for 20 years old. And so like most 20-year-olds, they're invested in all sorts of things that probably involve partying and getting drunk and not really thinking too far into the future. But hopefully in the next couple of years, they will start maturing in a way that allows them to actually take up the places that have, like the scenes of things of literature or other more established forms of mass communication, where we can actually start seeing the social benefit and limit the kind of opportunities for harm. I have left a whole lot more online for the backgrounds of the stories and where these things have come from for those who want to know. And of course, this presents a real challenge to brands as they have to pick their way about which side they're going to take, because generally marketers want to appeal to everybody. And sometimes the divisiveness of social media needs you to pick a side. And that could be a very challenging prospect for very many businesses.
Colin Cullis with Business Unusual this evening. Thank you, Colin.